You are listening to episode 119 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. On a scale from 1 to 10, Google products are okay.
Episode 119 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. Today is January 5th, 2014. I'm Matthew Dean Furlough, and this is my resolved brother, James Furlough.
You know, Google Plus changed the way that Hangouts work now, where it sets it as you actually schedule an event that you make public or private. I should see if there's a way to just have it not be public or something. I don't know. But now people are, like, responding yes and no to the event. It's weird. I liked it when you could just do the video and not worry about it. But anyways, there's my first complaint for the show.
Hey, man. Perfect timing. So what have you resolved for anything this year?
Oh, I totally do. So every year, my wife and I do goals. And
I actually have goals, a blog post. Or resolutions. I want resolves.
Then I guess we don't do that.
Dang it. Okay, I guess goals will have to do.
Yeah, so we actually, we're those people. So we actually sit down at the beginning of each year and say, like, hey, what do we want to accomplish? And we start out by looking at kind of our bigger vision for our lives. You know, what do we want our legacy to be? Where do we want to see ourselves 15, 20 years? Yeah, we're those people, like I said. And then from there, we have cascading goals for each other. And so I have 7 of them this year. Pretty exciting. It's a total preview, I guess. So like I said, I'm blogging about it. It's going live tomorrow. On OutsideTheRatRace.com. But my first one is I've been working on this, you're going to love it, this one-year Bible plan.
Yeah.
And I'm in year 3 of it. So. So for a few years I tried to do the one-year Bible plan, and it just, you know, it didn't work. You know, I wouldn't get through and I'd get discouraged. And so finally I said, no, I'm going to – let me pick a pace that's actually reasonable and that I can do. And so I essentially said, well, let me – do it in 3 years instead of one. And I have. And so I am 2/3 of the way through it. And I'm
nice.
Walking into the last third. Pretty exciting. The other one is I have a little bit of a health goal. You will probably laugh at me, but that's okay. I used to weigh 155 pounds. I no longer weigh 155 pounds.
What do you weigh?
I would like to once again.
Oh, come on.
I'm coming in around 175.
Holy cow.
I know, right?
What's weird to me is that, like, 175, I would look emaciated. That's 20 pounds heavier than you want to be. That's just crazy to me. It's weird that we have the same, you know, Gregor Mendel square, as it were, you know?
Yeah, so I knew you would laugh at me. But yeah. The other one, another health focus of mine, is to do 70 push-ups in a row.
Ooh, that's a big one.
I want to increase my strength. I can do 20, and so the idea is to add one a week. So this week was 21. So I did that for the first time today. So at the beginning of each show, you can ask me how many push-ups did you do, James?
You're not gonna. I don't know. Maybe this is just me, but I don't like to do a. I like to do a what's exponential growth or logarithmic growth? No, logarithmic. Which one's? What's the one where it, like, shoots up really quickly and then, like, you know, tables off towards the asymptote? I guess that's the other side of the exponential curve. I don't really remember.
Logarithmic.
Well, yeah, but whatever. It's, you know what I mean. I like to start off, like, getting as close as I can and then slowly approach where I want to go. You know. I just don't know. Ramping up one push-up per week sounds unbelievably daunting to me. I want to get up to, like, 50 and then, like, do 5 a month or something. I don't have, like – sounds rough.
Well, five a month is even more than what I was saying, but that's okay.
That's a good point.
Same. So that's the other one. Okay. And I think I can do it. Another one, my fourth one, is I don't want to have any expenses this year above $2,000. So I went back and I looked at my adult life. And even if you include college, because college tuition was a large expense above $2,000 each year and semester.
Yeah.
And so, but even after I graduated, every single year I've had something that was at least above $2,000. Now, some of them were buying investment properties, you know, so one could argue were they good or bad expenses. Doesn't matter. I don't want to have any of those this year. So, that's my goal. And I should say that my overall theme this year is consistency. So, you know, reading the Bible, be consistent. Eating healthy, consistent. Do push-ups, consistent. No big spending things. That's consistency. I also would love to increase my pay at HP. This is the kind of thing where I don't know how I feel about it. I got promoted last year, but didn't get a pay increase. So, you know, you're like, oh, so I'm expected to do more, I guess, for the same. And so, so I'd like to prove to them, no, I'm actually more valuable, and I've got a plan to do that. I also want to increase my side business income, and I've got a plan for that. And then I have a social focus as well, and that is we noticed that we moved into our new house, and we only hosted one family for dinner after we moved in. So in this last, you know, 6-7 months, we're like, that's lame. We could do better. So we want to host at least 6 meals at our house in the next year. Which I wanted to set it at 12, and Jesse was like, be reasonable. Let me just put it out there. Our big problem is that we don't have any kids. And so oftentimes we go over to someone else's house because it's just easier.
It's hard to convince the bechildren to leave their house when you don't have any. They're looking at you like, really? You're going to make us get a babysitter, come over to you, worry about our kids the whole time when it could be just as easy, way easier for you to come over here? Yeah. That's, you know what? That actually is a reasonable conundrum.
Yeah. So I would say, I mean, we hang out at friends' house. I mean, we did a lot more than 12, you know, dinners with people. I'm guessing this month alone we will probably do 5 or 6, but maybe one of them will be at our house.
Yeah.
And so those are my seven goals. I want to be consistent that year. How about you? Do you have any resolves?
Man, oh man. So I thought I had a list of them. And then I went to church this morning and I got kind of blown up because they were very self-improvement focused, which isn't inherently bad, but it's just not how I want my life to be focused. I want my life to be focused on other people and helping other people and being good in the community and you know. And so why would I set my goal? Although self-improvement are foundational steps towards being able to do those things, why would I make the goal line end at me? Why wouldn't I make the goal line do these things so that I can, you know, make the world a better place in X, Y, and Z ways, you know? And so that changed. You know, it started out with like health goals and I want to get to my goal weight this year, which I think is, you know, there's nothing wrong with that goal, but it's just not necessarily, it's like, what is the point if that is the end goal? There is no point, and it's not sustainable if that's the only reason. There's no reason to do it unless it has some other purpose. So I want to participate in more like athletic events, but I think what I really need to start thinking about is like, how can I, you know, build communities and help improve other people's health by bringing people along? And so I think my goal needs to be not sign up for a 10K. It's got to be get 5 people to go to a 10K with me, you know, or, you know, goals are more along that sort of a mentality. one of my big ones is I want to do better saving money this year. I want to have, you know, I want to be more intentional with my money.
Yeah.
And at the same time, not sacrifice the, you know, enjoying today, you know, for what it is. So it's like, you know, I put juxtaposed, save, you know, X, Y, and Z on money and don't spend money on this, but right below it, like, also go to concerts, you know, like, so, which I think, you know, I have to think about what that means. But honestly, there's one big one that I've almost decided that I think I almost want to put everything else, like, I don't want to say I don't want to have any other goals, but I don't want to act like I have any other 2014 goals other than this one. Because at some point I have to accept the fact that either I'm serious about this or I'm never going to do it. And at this point, the direction I've been going, I think the reality of it is I'm never going to be a published author unless I actually just go and try and get the book published. And I've had the book written for going on 5 years now. At what point do you just say, what are you waiting for? And so I think, you know, the more and more I think about it, the more and more I go, there's really very little holding me back, other than myself and worry and doubt and trepidation and all of those sorts of emotions. So, I think I have no doubt I'll accomplish more this year just because there are things that I wanted. You know, it's not like I'm verbalizing these things that I've wanted for a couple of months now and turning them into my 2014 resolutions. But I think the reality of it is, as far as those goals go, they don't happen this year. Like, who cares? Whereas getting published, I think, is a big one. I think it's worth
all right.
Audibly saying, like, you know, I need to make it, you know, it's like, yeah, I just need to make it. It just has to happen.
Cool. So
there's that.
That's a good goal.
Yeah. I think so. But you know what? We're not here to talk about this week, James. New Year's resolutions. This week, we're here.
I was having fun.
I know. To talk about technology and the continuing corporate opera, or the soap opera of corporations dealing back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and, of course, the technology that they are developing. But before we get into the heart of the show, James has to tell you about him working at HP. And so that they don't fire him because one of his goals is to get paid more.
And by, let's be clear here, by providing a lot of value and being an awesome employee and, you know, making it so that they recognize it. And they're like, boom. You know, or that it's undeniable. Like, oh, yeah, James, totally. So that's one of my goals. Those guys who I work for, but during this podcast, I don't represent them or any of their opinions. And this is actually really important for our very first segment. After we get done with this, but yeah, so I work for HP, but I do not represent HP or any of HP's opinions.
That is really important. Okay, I'm going to trust you. I'm just going to trust you because we're going with it.
Trust me.
If you want to follow us throughout the week when we post, you know, cool pictures of what we did on New Year's Eve or delicious looking pizzas that we eat, you can follow us on all sorts of forms of social media. My Twitter is at Matthew D. Furlow, and my Instagram is Next Wiggin 4, just NEXTWIGGIN 4, as in Ender Wiggin of Ender's Game fame.
I am at James Furlow on the Twitter and jamesfurlow.com on the rest of the web.
Cool. If you want to find out more about the show, you can always go to the show website. It's furloughbros.com. We got all sorts of clicks and links there. All the articles we talk about this week, all the articles we talk about in other weeks. There's not going to be any articles for last week because we didn't talk about any. But don't worry about it. Listen to the show. It was really entertaining. Just power through the whole 3 hours of it. I'm still kind of astounded we managed to go that long.
Entertaining and insightful.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? We were laughing No, we spent like 2 hours talking about the past stuff, and then just an hour on the predictions. No, it was a hour and a half on both. We were actually right down the middle.
Really?
I was impressed.
Really? Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and it's funny. I mean, like,
so if all you care about is predictions, it's an hour and a half. I actually have a separate show cut for it. So go to furtherbros.com. You'll see the two right there. One of them says the post-dictions. The other one says the predictions. It's pretty well labeled.
Yeah, nice.
You know what a post-diction is.
I like it. But what's important about the post-dictions, though, is that it's that we were right. That's what validates the predictions. I mean, the predictions, like, you know, anybody can predict anything, but if you have no track record, what's it worth? This is what it's worth, is basically what we're saying. It's worth at least tens of dollars. So value directly to the customer. Don't quote
me on that. Which you can give to us at furtherbros.com/store. Buy something worth at least $10. And, yeah,
nice.
You get a cool shirt or something from it.
I like it. Man, I got to be honest. As I look through these lists of things, my Mac Pro lust is ridiculous. It is absolutely ridiculous. I look through all of our articles. I'm just like, you know what I really want? Mac Pro. I watched a 15-minute unboxing video today.
That's pretty bad.
I don't have anything to do with it. I don't have any reason to own it, but I want one so bad I can't stand it. Let's not talk about that.
Instead, let's talk about something new that I got this week.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Okay. Oh, yeah. You highlighted the wrong color. Oh, man. James is holding up an iPad Mini.
I thought blue was my color.
Don't worry about it. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. Don't worry about it.
Okay. Yeah, I've got right here my hot little hands.
The bezel looks kind of weird on your iPad Mini, and it says HP on your iPad Mini. I don't get it.
It's really weird, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I have in my hot little hands an HP Slate.
Oh, baby.
There it is. A Slate 7-2800, for those of you who care about the numbers.
You know what I love about this? Sorry, go. I'm not going to interrupt.
Go ahead. You can love anything.
Okay, you know what I love about that? It's the fact that they go with the name Slate. They call it a Slate. Because, and this like dates back to when Microsoft didn't know what the iPad was going to be called. They like, was it going to be a tablet? But they already had tablet computers, and they knew it was going to be like it was going to be slightly different, so they had to give it a different name. And so they came up with the whole idea of the Slate computer. Everybody was like, that's a really stupid name. Like, it makes me think of, like, a slate of granite rock. It's like, slates are heavy. I want something light. And then Apple came out with the iPad, and Microsoft, you know, came out with the Surface, and Google came out with their tablets. And they all sort of became tablets, and everybody moved on to the name of the tablet. Except HP, who stuck it out with Slate. I don't know.
That's right.
It actually sounds cool nowadays. Is it's like it doesn't
yeah.
have the, like the same like you know, and it gives it a different name. I don't know. Yeah, come on.
I understand. I understand where you're coming from. This is the first generation Slate.
Okay.
So they actually you can't actually buy this anymore because they're now on Gen 2.
Okay.
But I won it way back when I did that trip to Las Vegas for HP Discover. And it was one of those – they were running this contest where they had like these little business cards type pieces of paper on tables. And they were like, oh, take a picture and post it on Instagram and, you know, hashtag HP Discover or something like that. Yeah. And you could also tweet it out. And they're like – and then we'll randomly pick people to give away stuff. And I was totally like, oh, yeah, me and three other people are totally doing this. I'm going to win.
That's awesome.
And so so I did. And I did a couple each day because it was like you could do up to three entries a day. And so I did. And I ended up winning. It was awesome. And they were like, yeah, we'll get it to you by November. Mm-hmm. So I got it this week.
Perfect timing.
I honestly thought they, like, forgot about me or that somehow I got disqualified and, you know, whatever. You never know, I guess. But hey, HP keeps their promises when they make a promise. Actually, it wasn't HP. It was some other promotional organization was doing it and stuff like that. Yeah, it was kind of crazy. I won, and so they sent me a direct message on Instagram, and then were like, hey, give us your email. And then so I gave them that, and then they gave me a phone number to call, and I called that, and you know, and then they went from there. So what this means, this has huge implications for my life, in essence.
Yes.
Number one, HP runs good old Android.
What here, version?
But it's 4.1. Which one's that?
That's Jelly Bean or Cupcake or
let's see.
Apple Pie. I don't
Android 4.1. I know, it's some dessert. Cupcake? No, that's too early. Jelly? No, that's 4.3. Oh, wait, maybe 4.
I thought 4.0 was Jelly Bean, and then 4.4 was Kit Kat, and so it was, that was what was so weird about their like their naming
Jelly
convention. They
4.1 is Jelly Bean.
Right.
It's Jelly Bean.
I don't actually know what that means. I have no concept of the different dessert dishes versus their features.
Well, it's obviously if it's not 4.4. They're currently on 4.4, right?
Which is Kit Kat.
Behind.
Right.
Sure. So anyways, so it's running that. I actually looked, and HP doesn't make it super easy to root this device. And so I won't be messing with it anytime soon. I'll probably wait a while before I try to figure that out. You know, they're still kind of got their Windows mentality of let's lock it down and not let you mess with things easily.
Right.
Unlike the Nexus systems where apparently you can root them in like 30 seconds.
Oh, yeah.
They're like, yeah, you don't need any special software. Well, it's like you need to somehow side boot on this other bootloader. And then once you do that, and they say that's the tricky part. And then once you've got it, then you can actually root it, and then once it's rooted, you can do whatever you want with it. So so it's got that. It's got some cool to plug the HP stuff. There is some cool HP software that they embedded in here to make it super easy to print from your tablet.
surprise.
Yeah, well, it's like, yeah, we don't really care on this show how it works. But trust me, it makes it so that it can switch networks all automatically and easily. And most tablets don't do that, including iPads, which is annoying when you're trying to use some of that stuff. But it's a function really of the technology. Yeah, hey, you know what? A lot of people do. It's a highly valuable thing. You may not, but that's okay. So what this means, essentially, is I get to try Android for the first time, you know, and like legitimately use it. I get to see what it's like to have a tablet to see if I will use that, if I like the 7-inch form factor or not. It's Wi-Fi only, and so I'll get to decide or see if, you know, does that feel limiting to me or not? Because, you know, eventually I have talked about getting a tablet, and so now it's kind of like I get to cheat and use one. Because it is, it's the first generation hardware, and so it's not as powerful as one would like. I mean, it was like, they came out with their new one, and it's, you know, twice as fast and three times as awesome and stuff like that. So this was clearly just their first time doing it, and, you know, it works, I guess. There's a couple my very first impressions of Android, outside of the hardware stuff, is, I am opening myself up here, but that's okay, I'm going to do it anyways. Not as good as iOS.
Now I want to hear the justification for this. I've always tried to back my statements of why I picked iOS over Android with like actual bullet points of things that iOS does better.
I mean, so let me rephrase this. It's not bad. I could definitely use it on a regular basis. You know, if this were my only choice, I wouldn't be like, oh man, I'd rather go without. You know what I mean? I find myself asking myself because, I mean, let's be honest. There's like, for example, Republic Wireless. You could do all your phone stuff for $25 a month.
Which is a good deal.
which is an amazing deal. I mean, we're talking unlimited talk, unlimited text, and you get unlimited 3G data. And if you want 4G, it's $40 a month.
Oh, that's not bad at all.
Yeah, exactly. But you got to have – they give you a choice of two phones, and they're both Androids because they embed some software on there that allows you to transfer quickly between or seamlessly between Wi-Fi and cellular. And so when you're within Wi-Fi, all of your phone calls and your text messages are all over Wi-Fi, to which they're like, what's super cool about that is if you're like on an airplane and you got the go-go internet, it's like, yeah, you can you can make phone calls and send text messages. It works because it's made to do that.
Yeah, so, it's like iMessages works in airplanes. I've used it before.
Yeah,
it's
awesome. Exactly. But they're like, but you're not restricted to iMessage, right?
Which is really nice because, you know, except all of my friends on these phones, so I don't know.
Well, I know. So there's my plug for public wireless. See how I'm like, you know, I'm drawn to that, right? Oh my gosh, $25 a month. That's very reasonable. Yeah. But it's Android, right? And so I find myself like going, okay, could I live with it? And that's part of my question, right? Is it, quote, good enough where that would make sense? Because, you know, I'm paying – what are we paying right now? I don't even know. I think I'm paying twice that right now per phone. So I think, it's around $100, somewhere in there. So, I mean, we're talking about saving $50 a month. You know, that's – real and you know adds up, but anyways, the point that I was going for was asking myself, can I live with Android? And I think the answer is yes from just using it for the 4 days, 3 days that I've had it. Now, having said that, I don't know how much of this is because the Slate's form factor versus, you know, others, the Nexus might be better, but it's just a lot of the apps you can tell they're not as fully featured. You know, like for example, the Facebook app, it feels like it's just the web page that they put an app wrapper around. So it doesn't flow quite as nicely. There's a lot of stuff. Some people are like, oh, I got sick about the transitions or whatever, which I think was a small majority that got blown up because it's Apple. You know, it's just like, you know, the transitions are not quite as slick and smooth. Like with another, like an example here is with the Kindle app, which I'm super excited. I was doing a lot of reading, and now it's like, oh, cool. Now I have a tablet to read on.
Yeah.
And on the iPhone, it gives you the choice of like the page turn effect versus just slide over. With this one, you just get the slide over.
Right.
You know, that's your one and only option. There's Feedly. It only half works. Kind of annoying because it's I use that annoying. All the time. I find that if the RSS feed is, you know, if the content is embedded in the feed, I can open it, no problem. But you know how sometimes you want to open up a link and go to the actual web page to see it? I would say half the time it crashes on me.
That's annoying.
Yeah, and it's little things like that, right? Where it's just like, oh, that should have just worked. Or they also give you a massive amount of control. I would say like too much control. Like when you, let's say like our mom sent me a pin on Pinterest, right? And I opened it up, clicked the link, it took me to the browser, and then asked me, do you want to open this in the browser or would you like to use your Pinterest app? I was like, oh, you use the Pinterest app. Do you want to do this just this one time or always? Like, oh, I'm not sure. Always, you know, so it's just like, you know, it's, you can customize it to do exactly what you want, which I guess is nice. There's a part of me that's like, can we give the, just make an assumption option? What do you think I want?
Assumption option.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, and so, I mean, that would be kind of cool. I must admit, it was super awesome to type in my Google credentials and have Gmail and contacts and calendar and Google Plus, all that stuff just be there.
Work.
That truly is magical. I remember when Google Music came out, I took the 3 weeks to upload all my music online, and it's still there. So, you know, so tap on the app, boom, there's my library. It's like, whoa, that's pretty awesome.
That is cool.
So I like that a lot, for sure. Yeah, that was a big deal. And it's real Gmail, you know, and so it works as you would expect it to,
yeah,
which I really liked. You know, they don't have folders that you're messing around with. You're not trying to make it work with the Apple stuff. It does what you would expect.
I only use the Gmail app on iOS. I don't even bother with Gmail anymore. I think it's great. And the best part about it is it opens all your links directly into Chrome.
I do have the Chrome browser on here. It came preloaded on it. And I do like it. I would argue it is better than the Safari browser.
Really?
Yeah. It just, you know, it's got the traditional tabs and stuff like that. They've figured out the whole text highlighting thing better than I think Apple has, where it does a little arrow thing that you can then move around instead of doing the magnifying glass and you're like trying to guess. You don't have to get it right the first time with them.
Yeah, I guess.
I do like that. Yeah, I don't know. It's like I said, it's there's some good stuff, definitely. I like it. I could probably live with it. At this point in time, iOS is a little slicker. The apps are just better polished overall. And, you know, which is, I'm not saying anything new here. It's just kind of I'm finally joining the party of understanding.
Welcome to the club.
Yeah, I'm sure that I fully intend to use this as a regular device. I've already noticed where I'll like be using this app, and then I would like switch over to my iPhone to update my Fitbit, you know, calories or something like that.
Right.
And I go, the screen's so small. so that's already happening. We'll see how I handle that. But it's cool. So it's 8 gigabytes. I don't know if that's a lot or not, but it's got an SD card slot. I have no idea how much they cost. I'm thinking about getting one just for the sake of it. If anything, now I've got something for our airplane ride, not the next weekend, but the following one, right, where you're going to get a guest on the show because I won't be here.
Right. Thank you for reminding me.
No problem. You know, it'd be nice to have that SD card and be able to fill it up with a movie or two. And you know, be able to watch that while flying. That'd be pretty awesome.
And the nice part about that is you should be able to download it like, well, I guess you don't store everything in iTunes, never mind. It's going to be a pointless suggestion.
Yeah, no, I do.
You should be able to just grab stuff from iTunes, from your Mac, throw it onto an SD. SD cards are cheap. You can get like a 30-gig one, 32-gig one for like 10, 15 bucks.
Oh,
like,
cool.
They're not bad. You got
to
look around.
Can I just go to like Staples or...
Fry's, Staples, Radio Shack, places like that, Best Buy's.
Okay.
I mean, you can pay $50 for one if you want, but there's no reason to.
Maybe I'll get online and do some price comparison. I'm also thinking about maybe getting a case. I don't know. Because it can't do the magnetic latch thing, it's like it's a full-on case.
Yeah.
I don't really want that, but I might. I don't know. I haven't decided yet. And so, so I finally have joined the tablet generation. I'm
Woo-hoo!
There. I got
Welcome
my
to the
and,
future. It's pretty awesome on this side of the fence.
Yep, I'm now an Android fanboy apparently, and who knows? You know, I may be switching everything over. I doubt it, but you never know. You never know.
Go for it.
Like I say, I might root it eventually, and that would be kind of cool to be able to try out the latest version of Android and see how that works.
Definitely.
We'll see.
Cool, cool, cool. I like it. I'm a fan.
Yeah.
I'm a fan that you're
a fan.
Cool, cool.
So there's my review.
Nice. So I just so we're clear, you have two blue stories. Does that mean those are two Stardy stories?
Yeah, sorry.
Cheater, man.
I messed up is really what happened.
Okay.
Because I did the actual story first. It's quick. So somebody did a survey. I don't remember who. Pew Research Center.
Pew, they're good. And,
yeah, yeah. And essentially they asked, what social media websites do you use? And they were able to compare year over year. The big news, I guess.
It's not good for... What? Go for it.
Yeah, I know. So the not big news is Facebook's huge. 71% of adults online use Facebook.
71%.
I'm guessing that's in the U.S.
Probably. Well, in the U.S. That might be worldwide. I mean, well, probably.
Yes,
online.
It is the U.S.
People? Okay. Well, never mind.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's a lot.
That's a
up
ton.
Up from 67% last year. So that's almost one in four. So at that point, it's got to be people like our dad, right? Where he goes onto our mom's account now to see right. What's going on. Which I'm taking bets with Jesse on how long it'll take him before he just bites the bullet and signs up.
He can be pretty stubborn in that sort of thing. Just not do it for the sake of not doing it.
I know. And now it's a badge.
I'm gonna say, and he's now figured out a workaround so that he can experience Facebook without having to sign up for Facebook. So
that's true. That's true. So the big news, though, is that we have a new number two. I think.
Ooh.
No. We have the same number two. Yeah. So number two is LinkedIn. Shockingly. Now number three used to be Twitter. It is now Pinterest.
Really?
Yep.
Holy cow, I didn't know that.
So LinkedIn's at 22, Pinterest is at 21, and my guess is next year Pinterest will be number two because their growth rate's significantly faster than LinkedIn.
It's weird, and maybe we're biased because we don't talk about Pinterest that much, and maybe I'm biased because I don't use Pinterest that much. I'm just like... always kind of astounded that they're as big as they are, you know?
The thing you got to remember, right, is it used to be that hardware stores were, mom and pop, not very big, you know, and they were a place where men went, right?
Right.
And then you had a company that came along and said, you know what, we're going to design a hardware store that women like to shop at. Okay.
Right.
And that was Home Depot.
Yeah.
And they did okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Lowe's copied that model. I mean, even more so, I would argue, than Home Depot.
Yeah, it's funny. And that's actually one of the things I always find interesting walking into Home Depot is how many, women there are in it, mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so it's just, all that to say, it's honestly, this is going to sound weird. If you can satisfy the female shopper, you could do really well,
right.
Cause they spend a lot of money in a household. They make a lot of decisions and, if they feel, it's kind of like, especially with like the hardware stores, it's kind of like, dude, the guys are going to shop wherever, they don't care as long as you got the part.
It's kind of like it's weird. It's funny. I think that's part of the reason why Reddit doesn't do as well as it does is because it's so heavily male laden. And what's weird about it is there's nothing inherent about Pinterest or Reddit that is like designed for females or designed for males. It's like just the community.
I would say that's not true. Where, like with Reddit, the design is very functional. They don't spend time making it cute and interesting. And, it's just very like, dude, here's where it is, whereas Pinterest, it's all about photos and, cute stuff. And, girls
but
are
But what I would say is, I would say this. Yes, Pinterest does spend more time on that. One of the big reasons why Reddit doesn't is because all of your different, outside of the main page, all of the different subreddits are controlled. all of the CSS, all of your style sheets are controlled by the moderators. So that's, you know, the only reason why those aren't modded to look cutesy is because the community, the guys who run the different subreddits, have decided not to make them cutesy, which I think is, and that's what my point is that they become these communities that feed on themselves, right? Pinterest would love to have men, just as many men as they do women. It just so happens that they collected women, and so all of the user-generated content tends to be cutesy stuff, and so, you know, and not to say that, you know, and this is incredibly misogynistic, so, you know, we're painting in the broad strokes, because when you paint with broad strokes, it saves lots of time. What I think is interesting is that they become these self-feeding communities that in some ways limits the growth of Reddit and expands the growth of Pinterest, you know? I don't know. It's just interesting. It's interesting that they're kind of to the point where they are what they are. I don't know if you could change them if you wanted to without ruining the community, because you'd have to change the community. This is like the battle of sexes writ large.
Yeah. And instead of heading down that hole, I'm going to move on.
Right. So Apple bought a...
Because I feel like we've already got... No. I got one more thing. I'm going to move on to the last thing that they looked at was how frequently they use it.
Okay.
Okay, so there was how many and then how frequently.
All right, that's a good question.
Believe it or not, Facebook is still in the lead. 63% of adults visit it daily.
I totally believe that.
Instagram is number two at 57, right behind them.
Well,
which I think is percentage of users.
Okay.
Yes, that's right. Okay, so... 63% of that 71% of the population. Does that make sense? Yeah. Visit Instagram is 57%. Twitter is 46, so not quite half of its users go daily. And then Pinterest is not daily at all. It's 23% visit daily. 30% go weekly, and then 45% go less often. That's probably the guys part of it. And then LinkedIn's the worst of them all, where 13% daily, which I'm like, who are those people and why?
Yeah, seriously. What is so interesting there? Employees.
Yeah, really? And then they're weekly, they're 34%, and then less often is 52%, which I guess I fall into the weekly category because once a week I go to LinkedIn to post this podcast, and then I get out.
So, funny. Yeah, I'm definitely the less than. It's funny. I'm kind of like I get into zones. It's like with Twitter, like I guess I once a week, because I try to tweet once a week at least. And I do check in pretty frequently, but I don't do it every day. Whereas like Instagram and Facebook, man, like I'll check 2-3 times a day probably. Which I think is more normal. I don't know. I'm a whatever. I get bored. ADD. But
now, see, if Feedly was in that list, that's where my once or twice an hour.
Oh yeah.
But because that's
what I was gonna say. What's interesting about that is that Reddit and Feedly are like where I actually waste my time online aren't even included on. Isn't even included. Those are not social media sites.
Yeah, I know.
But
weird.
I think it's ridiculous that Reddit's not considered a social media site. But that's a branding thing that they've done themselves. Whatever.
Well, the same with like with Tumblr or even Blogger, right? I mean, they really are. If you think about it, they're just they're categorized under blogging platform.
Right. So my turn.
Okay, go ahead. I guess.
So Apple acquired this company called Snappy Labs. They're the maker of Snappy Cam. Have you used Snappy Cam? It costs $1, so probably not.
Ha! What are you trying to say?
Humbug is what I'm saying.
Look. I have spent money on camera apps, okay? I bought Camera Plus. I even bought their in-app purchase to get the special filters. Nice. I just bought the Pebble Cam, which lets me take a picture using my – did I talk about this last week?
I think so. Yeah, you could take a shooter's picture from your – you could trigger the camera from your watch.
Yeah, it would show me a preview of the photo on my watch to make sure that I was in it. And then I could actually – then I could press the button and it would actually take the picture. So I've spent money on camera apps, okay?
Well, this one was a good one.
Basically, well, I missed it.
I know. Basically, what this dude would let you – what his app would let you do, one of the big features of it, was that it lets you take up to 30 full-resolution pictures per second.
That's a lot.
Yeah. He was basically taking it at, like, standard frame rate, like taking full-on video at full picture quality, which is pretty impressive considering the fact that the Apple camera only does, like, 10 full-resolution frames per second. And if you,
which,
you
think, I mean, who needs 10, 30? Who cares, right? I mean...
Well, it's for like action shots and stuff. Well, yeah, I mean, but so yeah, you'd say that you would say that that makes sense, but and it's like it's so that you can take action shots and like get people doing really cool stuff and like you know those perfectly timed photos where it's just a series of like 30 shots, you know, and you're picking the right one. And it's sort of like the whole the whole, you know, high-speed camera thing. So this is just what it was. It was a cool, unique app. He was selling it for a buck. He was making a bunch of money. They were making a bunch of money. But this is the thing. So Apple bought the company, and they took the app off of the App Store as soon as they did, which I think is interesting. But they basically, when they say they bought the company, they basically just hired the dude and gave him money to get his technology. Because it turns out it's like one guy who did it, and he was sitting in like one of his engineering classes where they were talking about like compression of data and pictures and stuff, and he had this like all of a sudden it hit him, and he thought, you know, I bet I could do that better. So he rewrote the compression algorithm for compressing JPEGs, and.
Okay.
Was able to like really, you know, and
it's
like,
in a different compress, like 50,000 lines.
Yeah, and did like what normally takes like 50,000 lines of code. He did it in like 10,000, which you're like, what the heck?
Dude, Wozniak report.
I know. Basically, he was like, basically, I had to write a bunch of like, you know, like a little bit of assembly and a lot of C. And you're like, what the heck, dude? He's like writing like all of his own objects and stuff. He's just going for it. And then the best part about this is like the whole the JPEG compression process is you analyze the actual bit data as it comes in, and then you compress it. But then you have to do another step. It's like it's the Harris compression or Harrison compression. I can't remember what it's called. But there's another compression step, which is essentially a, quote, lossless compression step, where you take your data and you couple it with all the rest of the metadata that's required to make a JPEG, like an actual the file extension, and then you output the file extension JPEG with all the metadata and everything included. And he was sitting there going, we could get it, like, we could improve the frame, the number of captures that you could get, because we could improve the write rate, but we couldn't get good enough. So I wanted to get it to like 30. And he goes, so I ended up having to rewrite the entire like standard compression for how you make a JPEG as well in order to get there. What the heck? And then like and like, who is this guy? And basically what he did was he embarrassed the Apple engineers. Apple engineers thought they were doing a good job. Yeah, man, we got 10 full resolution pictures per second. This guy tripled it, like just writing his own app. Doesn't have any hardware acceleration or anything, and so Apple hired him.
You know, sounds so, like he deserves it.
Yeah. How about we give you a lot of money, and then we give you a lot more money, and you go and work for us? Because that's awesome.
Well, and if I remember correctly, too, he actually had a blog post where he semi-explained how he did it, and that also got taken down almost instantly.
Yeah, there was a couple of He's, like you said, dude's in a different league. So, I don't know. I keep thinking, like,
Yeah, there's some people like me where they'll give me a promotion without a raise, and then there's some people like him where, you know what, he deserves every single penny that they give him.
Yep.
And that's I'm okay with that.
Yeah, jeez Louise, man. Talk about smart.
Man, that's
crazy.
That is pretty cool. Yeah, I just rethought it. Oh, okay.
Yeah, and what's great about it, what?
I was just like, that's what Wozniak did. It's like, oh, I just wrote it. It just made sense this way. Oh.
Right. Well, and what's great about it is that it's like, from what I'm reading, it's not even necessarily that, like, I know just enough about image compression to be dangerous, you know, and it's like, you know, JPEG's not, obviously there's a whole bunch of different compression formats. There's a whole bunch of different formats, whether it's PNG or GIF or JIF or MPEG or whatever, like all your different, you know, compression. And it's all about, you know, how do you take, effectively, you take what the output of the camera module, that's always the same, and then how do you compress it into a format that, you know, is small and doesn't lose information or loses the least amount of information. And so what it, you know, almost sounds like is, you know, it's not necessarily that he rewrote the JPEG, but he, you know, or like, you know, it's, it actually sounds like he output something that is different than a JPEG. It just so happens that something that can read JPEGs can also read his, and his compresses a lot faster. Which I think, I guess, is effectively the same thing, but, you know, the JPEG compression format's like a really, it's a standard format, and he had to do something different. But it, because it outputs a standard format effectively, you know, it trumps it, which you're like, it makes sense. I mean, there's other formats and better compressing, you know, faster compressions and smaller data packages than JPEG. So it's not like, what he's doing is unheard of, I guess. You know, it's just a, you know, it's one of those engineering things where you're like, wow, I can understand it. And I might have even stumbled upon that idea, but there's absolutely no way I would have been able to execute on it. You know?
Yeah.
Oh, it's cool. It's very neat. Very, very cool.
That is cool.
Yeah.
What was also cool was an article this week that created a little bit tiny dust storm. Not big, but, you know, big enough. That was talking about Google Glass, or one of the technology we all love to hate, apparently.
Apparently, I know.
So there was a Wired editor who wrote an article called My Year with Google Glass, which it was kind of funny. People came out and were like, that's kind of impossible because they didn't start handing these out until like 8 months ago. So,
you know, but if you're going to go for it, just go for it, man. It's, you know, I don't hold it against them.
Yeah. No, I'm just – and I'll read – there was two articles. So this Wired editor, Matt Honan, not to be confused with the team-related talk show guy, and then Robert Scoble, like a huge fan of Glass, wrote a reply essentially to him. So we'll cover both of them. So anyways, this guy with this Wired dude with Google Glass, he essentially – was like, it's pretty cool, but in the end, I don't know if I'll ever see it taken off. You know, and so he was like, he starts off with this crazy anecdote where his wife was having a baby and, or was going to have a baby, and he was like, I got an idea. I can be in the moment. Let me just record it with Glass.
Right.
She did not want him to do that. No, right. She goes, the crazy part is she wanted him to get pictures and video.
Right.
Not using that. And he was like, yeah, but if I use Glass, then my hands will be free. And I could be watching the whole time. She was like, yeah, I don't care. And you know, so you're just like, oh, that's, and part of it is she's like, you're weird looking and I don't want to have to look at you when I'm giving birth. And you know, and he goes, that's part of it, right? Is that they just look weird. And so you know, he goes, I'm really hoping that Google makes them look cooler and actually adds design, kind of like what we talked about couple weeks back, and things like that. And yeah, so but he's like, no, it's pretty cool to use it. The thing that he also goes, you know, price point is a big deal, and you know, stuff like that. One of the things though, where was it? So we talked about the apps, right? And he was like, honestly, third party apps, dumb. He's like, you could install some apps from the get go and more over time, but I never found the first batch of third party apps particularly useful. Twitter was just too much. The New York Times breaking news alerts was okay, but they were just bad. He goes, now Google's native apps, on the other hand, he goes, those are pretty great. He goes, I love Glass for very basic rapid-fire email replies. The navigation stuff was aces. And now, and Google Now for your face is incredible. And which I was like, nice, for your face. And that's what he calls it. And I think they should call it that. He's like, the very fact that it has that ambient location awareness and can give you relevant notifications, he's like, that's pretty darn cool. And so he's like, and that's going to be amazing. He does say, though, that it kind of – he was like, it should do a better job of that kind of ambient know-where-you-are-for-location type stuff. He's like, it just you know, it almost – it can't differentiate too much between where you are. And he's like, and that would just make a huge, huge difference. Like, for example, oh, you're at a dinner party. I am not going to send you Twitter notifications right now. You don't care.
Right. That would be cool.
You know
cool.
what I mean? Yeah, knowing that kind of stuff. And so he's like, so, you know, we've got to get there next. He does say, and I thought this was super interesting, and I don't remember if I said it, but I definitely thought it, is he said that he converted over to Android because of it. And what he found was that at least right now, and I think they're coming out with an app to solve this, which – makes you wonder why after this article. But he said that iOS 7 didn't really integrate everything, which I know to be true. And he said, but Android did. And so he got an Android phone and was carrying that around in his pocket in yeah. addition to his iPhone. And then eventually he was like, dude, this is dumb. I should just switch over to Android. And so That's he did. Funny. You know? And so he's like, so that got me to switch, right? That's a switcher thing. Of course, he did say he overall hates his phone as a result of it. Well, no. He hates phones in general because he's like, these phones, they separate it from our lives and they take us away from what's going on and our hands are busy. And he's like, they're just – this idea of it getting out of the way is just amazing. And so he was like, he found himself asking, you know, can adding a device actually make you more present? Or over time, will it just become another distraction and, you know, something else that you can just stare off into the distance from? He's like, you know, he doesn't know yet. But yeah, so, you know, his whole thing was, yeah, I don't know. I don't think it'll happen. And then Robert Scoble, he replies back with a sensational headline of Google Glass is doomed. Which are just like, yes. Which he goes, first, I love headlines that stretch the truth a bit, which is then he gets his dig into him about it not actually being a year. So right, you're like, yeah. Oh, nice. So he says he has a couple observations since using it. Number one, he goes, nearly everybody wants to try it. He's like, they got us to pay $1,500 to be their PR agent. It was brilliant. And he says that people are often pretty nice about it. And he was frustrated that they don't have a lot of good APIs so that other developers can really start making some stuff, which is why they don't work very well. He's like, and there are things like battery life and even design that they need to change. And he said the price is going to matter a lot. How about this for the scuttlebutt? He goes, I'm hearing they won't be able to get it under $500 for 2014.
Yeah, and unlike Apple, that doesn't mean that it's actually going to, you know, that's probably true.
Yeah, so his whole thing, he goes, which means it's doomed because you can't hit that price point. And yeah. He goes, eventually they'll get under $300. And when they do, yeah, they're going to sell a ton, just a truckload of them, right? Which, you know, if it's really awesome for $300 and my student loans are paid off, I might be interested in it, you know, at that much.
Yeah.
And, yeah, and he also says, like, you know, the camera really isn't that scary once people understand how it works. It's like, it's okay. And then apparently there's some eye sensor thing that it looks back on your own eye that nobody knows what that is and what that's doing. And he's like, that's the thing. I'm like, what is that all about? I don't even know. And, yeah, he's also just like, I wish that they were, I love this. He's like, do you love yours? He's like, yeah, I do. But I'm frustrated at the speed at which they're iterating on these. Which I'm like, dude, you've had it for 8 months. Like, how fast should they be iterating on this? I don't.
Well, I mean, you know, if you're an Android, you know, fan, you're used to, you know, every couple of months the newer, you know, best model comes out.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
You're not used to the Apple product cycle.
Yeah, so he says the problem is really just expectations are way too high, and which is why it will, no matter what, it'll honestly seem like a failure in 2014. Furthermore, if it comes out. If it becomes publicly available at the same time as Apple's iWatch comes out, it will definitely be compared with each other, even though they're genuinely two different types of hardware.
Right.
And Apple's going to win that. Right. So it'll be considered a failure.
I'm still willing to bet that the Apple Watch will be more expensive than the Google Glass, and I'll bet people will consider the Apple Watch a success and the Google Glass a failure.
I could see that. He also said the other problem that they're going to run into, besides a high price, is like they actually need to be fitted to hit you properly, and you need to be trained on how to use them. I remember talking with David. He was like, yeah, it was crazy. He's like, I spent hours trying to figure stuff out. He's like, there's zero documentation. He's like, I'm just going on random forums. I'm like, okay, I hope this doesn't brick it, you know, and trying to load stuff. He's like, it is not there yet at all. I hear they're coming out with an app store, which will help enough. But they just need a better API.
This doesn't break it. That's awesome.
yeah. He says like right now the UI cannot handle a lot of apps. And so he's like, so you can't put 300 apps on there like you can with a phone. He's like, I don't know how they're going to handle that, but, they need to figure that one out as well. Again, he says the battery life needs to be fixed. I guess if he does a live video broadcast, the battery lasts only 45 minutes, and it gets really hot. Yeah, so he's like, so that's got to be figured out. He says that, which I was like, I don't even know you could do this. He says photo workflow is bad. Apparently, you can't really edit them on it. No. I remember what he was saying, is that he'll take a bunch of photos, and then he'll want to edit the one or pick the one that's the best to share online. He goes, but it doesn't sync with your phone unless you're on Wi-Fi. He's like, and that's dumb. He's like, that should be like instantaneously start sending that bad boy to my phone so that I can pull it up, choose the best one, maybe edit it, and then share it. They don't let you do that.
That'll change. I mean, that'll come. You know,
hopefully. Yeah.
Well, I mean, you may not even be this generation. It might be two generations from now, but that'll come. I mean, that's just that's one of those ones where you sit there and go, I can see why you'd say that's annoying now, but it's not like that's going to be that way forever.
I took a – I did not, I guess. David took a photo of me during jiu-jitsu. It looked awesome. I mean, I was like
– I'm going to learn jiu-jitsu.
Yes, that's right. Thank you. The picture looked – I mean, the quality was – great. I mean, it was a well-lit room. I wasn't moving, all that stuff. But it was, you know, it was good. It looked awesome and menacing. It was fantastic. He also, so his thing was, he goes, there's no contextual filtering. Okay, so for example, he goes, when I'm standing on stage, why does Glass give me tweets? Why can't it recognize that I'm at a conference, at least, and show me only tweets about that conference, hashtag style? He goes, but it can't. Because this contextual OS isn't done and probably won't be done until 2015. Google Glass desperately needs these contextual signals to know when to show you appropriate stuff. Skiing, only show me stuff about the mountain I'm on. In a meeting, do something like the mind meld does and show me stuff about what we're talking about. Shopping, show me coupons and to-do lists. But today it's pretty stupid context-wise. It makes the experience of using it not great.
That seems like an important one to get on. you know.
Yeah, which, you know, it sounds like they are working on it. They just, you know, it's not easy. And then he says the Gruber problem, which I'm going to guess he's referring to, was it Dan Gruber? John Gruber?
Oh, what's I don't know. First
the Apple dude, Darien Fireball guy. He says that I think I figured out
John Gruber.
John, sorry. Okay. Yeah, he says oh yeah, he says most are disappointed in themselves and their lack of ability to put their phones down. He goes, they fear that if we're going with glass that they would totally lose themselves to their mobile addictions. He goes, and they're right to be scared of that. If glass actually worked the way I'm dreaming of, it would be even more addicting to our online world than he would be even more addicted than he is today. It's like, and so they're, you know, they're scared of losing their humanness. I'm like, whoa, that's a little intense. Yeah. So he's saying, like, you know, they're not going to, you know, they're going to come out with it this year. He goes, but it's probably going to be like $600, and it's going to look dorky, and expectations are just going to be way too high for that. He goes, but by 2020, he goes, I'm quite convinced that this will be a big deal, and there will be lots of competitors by then. So,
yeah, you know, and you know,
and they got deep enough pockets, they'll keep iterating. I mean, they'll do exactly like we said. They'll do exactly like they did with Android for this, right? Where they'll be like, yeah, well. Whatever, we'll keep trying. We'll keep moving. They believe in it. They obviously think it's fun, and yeah.
Yeah, you know, yeah. It's clearly the next Android equivalent project for them. I mean, it's just unquestionable. One of the things that I saw an article that kind of this is awesome, and because this. Another article. Even Google employees are giving up on Google Glass. So this is another naysayer article about why it's terrible. So this was this is JRO. Here's a bad sign for Google's still nascent glasses project from Glass Evangelist. This is from Scrover's article. I'm also worried at a new trend. I rarely see Google employees wearing theirs anymore. Most say, I just don't like advertising that I work for Google. I understand that. Quite a few people, I assume, I work for Google when they see me with mine. I just hope it doesn't mean that Google's average employee won't support it. That is really what killed the Tap PC efforts inside Microsoft until Apple forced them to react due to the popularity of iPad, which seems a little generous to the awesomeness of the Microsoft tablet projects. Not sure that it was lack of employee enthusiasm that made them unpopular. I think it was the fact that there was like no use case that made sense because they weighed too much and they weren't, you know, they're too overloaded. But the question that this author asks is, if Google employees aren't willing to be trailblazers, then who will? Basically, she's advocating that
I'll do it for free, too.
I know. You really require somebody to be your mavens, as it were, your hardcore fans. And, you know, if you can't rely on the tribalism of your own corporation to support projects, can you really – you know, I mean, these are people that have them, that own them and use them, and they don't use them. You know, it's funny. I think about the fact that, like, you know, where we live, man, you, like, I remember when the iPhone 4 – came out, and I got to see white iPhones. If you remember, this is like when they were glass front and back the first time, and I like only the black ones for like 8 months. I remember seeing white ones early because, you know, so many people had them, and like, and it just was one of those things where it was like, you know, people got into it, and like they found back channels to be able to get, you know, either the scrap white glass that they weren't actually building into phones, and they take them and they take their black iPhone and like swap out for the white glass, or they have like the production run
phones that weren't done yet, and Apple employees were able to take them and buy them for themselves, and they were using them and maybe selling them.
Nice.
and I just sit there and I go, like, you know, where I live in the Silicon Valley, you know, we see, like, if you're going to see it in the wild, you see it here first. You know, we saw Google Glass, like, the, you know, like weeks after the product launched, we saw our first sighting of it. You know, and in the wild, I don't see them at all anywhere, which I think is really interesting. And I realize it's a very small group of people that actually paid the $1,500 for it, but Google itself has a huge, like, number of people that are, like, beta testers that are supposed to be using them and wearing them all over the place and out and about with them. And maybe I hang out with the wrong group, but I don't hang out with the wrong group. People just aren't using them. And, you know, it's,
well,
and,
do you know people who have them and choose not to wear them?
See, no, that's – I don't.
Okay.
You
just met the right crowd or something like that, right? Okay, right. I understand.
I mean, it's mostly most of my friends who don't own them, because I've you know, especially in the last, like, 2 months, I've had, like, oh God, there's probably 10 of us that have all gotten offers that are, we're all like, we're just broke. We do it, but we're broke. We don't have $1,500. Sorry. And so it's like, it's one of those things where, you know, it's getting around, and that's the other thing. I feel like 10 months ago, every single one of us would have found $1,500. I would have found $1,500. I had $1,500, and I decided not to do it. And I think 8 months ago, I might have, you know, decided to do it. And
put your Olympic hopes on pause. Be like, oh, I'll get
exactly worth it. Especially 8 months ago, before I bought my car, man. Whatever, go for it. You know, and so I shrug my shoulders at this whole thing, and I'm like, you know, I get the feeling that this project of theirs is, you know, is right now the current phase is really running low on steam. That being said, nothing has changed about the idea of heads-up display and the utility of it and the future of it. It's obviously going to be a huge part of our lives. It'll be as obvious as omnipresent, you know, touchscreens and you know, foldable paper, you know, foldable, movable paper. Like, it's one of those things where you sit there and you go, like, anywhere where, you know, I don't know, because it's, you know, the only literally in my mind, the only thing that could kill the idea of heads up display are projectors embedded in everything. That's just sort of like, you know, projected in your eyes. But that, at some point, we'd have, you know, a heads up display for all sorts of things. Obviously. I mean, like, and the crazy part to me is that, like, right now it's illegal to do it while you drive. Where you sit there and you go, I think eventually it'll be a requirement while you drive, because it. You know, you'll be able to get more information and more contextual information. And it just has to be contextually aware to turn off Twitter while you're driving. But, like, the idea that, you know, certain information – so I don't know. It's weird. I think what we are seeing is that the current phase of Google Glass has run out of most of its steam. And it's honestly probably a good thing that the next phase is going to be required is still going to be too expensive. Because I feel like if you got one in the hands of everyone, but they weren't very cool or very useful or they were difficult to use, you'd actually run into an inverse PR problem where too many people would be able to get to use it and say, this is stupid. It's a piece of junk. I don't want one. They'd throw it aside. Whereas at $1,500, you get the people who are willing to, you know, like David Perry, who are willing to put up with hours of, you know, searching on forums. And at $500, $600, you actually have the same or a similar mentality. It's people who are willing to – they're making a big investment, so they're going to put the time in to figure out how to use it. They're your next phase. I think it's almost a good thing that it's going to be too expensive for everybody to own one, because if everybody could own one and there was a huge marketing push and everybody did own one and, you know, a lot of the things that really are required to make it an awesome product, like better battery life, you know, better syncing, better UI.
whatever. I mean, they made the Chromebooks pretty affordable, and those sales started off slow, and apparently they're ticking up pretty fast this year. So
because I think the Chromebook is getting better. I don't know. I mean, it's, you know, there are more apps.
I'm just saying. It sounds like they could both work. They're clearly doing both.
Right. Okay.